88. Parliament of Birds. Ash's teepee smelled of dust, though nothing there seemed actually to be dusty. Perhaps there was a candle for that, he thought, taking a seat. The peripheral regarded him levelly, from around the ostentatious intricacy of Ash's faux antique display, then lowered its eyes as if tracing the patterns carved in the tabletop. Ash was to his left, nearer the peripheral. She'd unpinned her threatening little hat, which resembled a black leather toad, and placed it before her on the table. "You're being given a ticket for the Parliament of Birds," she'd said to him, and when he'd started to ask what that might mean, she'd touched a finger to her black lips, silencing him. Now he saw the jet and sterling spider from her chatelaine, untethered, crawl down from her left jacket cuff to pick its rapid, needle-footed way across the carving, toward him, rhinestone eyes glinting. It climbed onto the back of his left hand, entirely painlessly. Indeed, he couldn't feel it there. He thought of the Medici, dropping tendrils imperceptibly between the cells of his skin. Ash spoke at length then, in birdsong, and he understood.
"Don't do that," What?
Netherton asked, hearing the query emerge instead as two mewling, long-voweled syllables. She'd no idea, Ash said, her own vowels lengthening, but given Vespasian's fetishism and Connor's evident delight in his first lesson, it was most certainly a weapon of some kind. Lobeer, she pointed out, would have resources for having things rapidly and secretly fabricated. But why, Netherton asked, their shared tongue growing more Germanic, was Ash telling him this now? He didn't tell her that he found it increased his anxiety, or that this costume jewelry perched on the back of his hand made him want to scream. But he wished that those feelings could somehow be inadvertently conveyed through whatever mutant low Dutch he might momentarily be mouthing. Because, Ash said, swinging off into something that reminded him of no language whatever, nor birdsong, Lobeer had herself, virtually overnight, become a Continua enthusiast. And because she, Ash, had come to see, while facilitating Lobeer's strategies in Lev's stub, that Lobeer was playing a longer game there than made sense for her to play. And because, and here her eyes narrowed to a single pupil purr, having delivered the plans for whatever system or device to Lobeer, Vespasian had gone uncharacteristically off to Rotterdam and died there on Friday, suddenly and unexpectedly, but of apparently natural causes, a circumstance in which Lobeer, in Ash's opinion, had seemed remarkably uninterested. And this had all occurred since they'd met Lobeer, she continued, so really rather a busy week. But now, she said, the period of Netherton's ticket, necessarily quite brief, was nearing its end. Once it ended, she expected Netherton not to mention these things at all. She had been motivated in sharing, she said, out of a degree of self-concern, but also by concern for him, and for Lev, and for Flynn and her family as well, whom she viewed as relative innocents, inadvertently abroad. But what, Netherton asked, only now managing to ignore the constant unfamiliarity of his own verbal production, had she hoped thereby to accomplish? She didn't know, he understood her to say, but had felt she had to do something. and Lobir's means of knowing who said what via the aunties of the Klept were inestimable. And here it ended, with the spider springing from his hand and scrambling back to her. Then the three of them sat there for a long moment, Netherton taking the peripheral's hand beneath the table and wondering how a sadistic continuate enthusiast might die unexpectedly but seemingly naturally in Rotterdam, and how he himself might best remember not to ask Lobir that, as he wasn't supposed to know. But then, he thought, what if she'd heard them conversing in birdsong and gibberish? What wouldn't she make of that?